Welcome once again to Word on the Hills with me, Gwyn Sheltimer, my co-host Chris Cameron, and our guest this week, Poet Laureate Emeritus of Coburg, Ted Amsden. Each week at this time, we visit with authors or editors, even publishers who have regional or local connections. We hope to find out a little about their lives and what prompts them to write and why they write the things they do. This week, we're very pleased to have a poet, writer, and editor of an online now news site, journalist and photographer, Ted Amsden, with us today. Ted is known as a poet, a very public one, as he served as Coburg's Poet Laureate for 2 terms until June 2019. But he has been living a secret life, we hear. As he says, for the past 8 years, his focus has been on prose. And so naturally, we want to know more. So, Ted, why have you been so reticent about what you've been writing? What prompted you to share your story with us and with our audience now?
A little backstory. I was very unsure of myself as a teenager. University woke me up a bit, but didn't present a cure. I had to go out into the world and figure myself out. I came to believe early on that competence is proven with a body of work. I tried landscape design, business copywriting, student ownership, life in Mexico. I got a little life experience, but created nothing I was proud of. When I became a photojournalist, I was able to build up a body of work that proved I was competent. It was only after several years in the position of poet laureate that I accepted that I was a poet, because I had established a proven record. Until that point, I was a hobbyist. With prose, I have 2 different works in hand now, a humorous novel and a collection of observations about life and motorcycling. And with my 3rd book, a serious novel in the revision stage, I have a body of work that proves to me that I'm capable as a prose writer, and so I wanted to announce it. It's a new decade, time to put aside what works, photography and poetry in this case, and go for new goals. I haven't figured out all the publishing angles, but they'll come along as I go along, or not.
It's interesting to see people's way of looking at themselves and you deciding that you have to have the proof before you can actually give yourself the name, and yet it, and other people around you have been giving you the names for a long time. So I hope that boosts your confidence a little. Tell us a little bit about the Now, N-O-W, news site that you edit and manage.
The News Now Network, it started with Bob Owen, who launched Crammy Now as an online blog that covered social events and politics in the township. He started it because the Colburn Chronicle, a print weekly, folded. Along the way, he picked up the advertiser stuff that was solid citizen journalism, created a great following. My friend Jay Robinson came along and bought him out when Bob retired. And Jay ran it for a while on his own, became very successful. And he got the idea to create additional blogs across Northumberland, specific to their locations. We have Trent Hills Now, Coburg Now, Port Hope Now, and Brighton Now. I started writing articles for him, but I quickly got bored, because I've done that time in the trenches, taking other people's story. I'm not an editor, but I said I'd wanted the job. So I started doing that. I'm not technically proficient as an editor. I focus on standardizing the articles and the look across the brand. That said, 20 years in the trenches, I have my strong feelings about how news should be presented and how it should be said. So that's what guides me. The News Now Network has 8 part-time writers and photographers across the county. They're paid. The sites are funded by sponsors and donations. It solicits financial community support. We reach over 37,000 people a week. We're worth paying attention to. And so I'm proud to have that association. Coburg Now, Port Hope Now, Crammy Now, Brighton Now, Trent Hills Now.
Well, listeners, you check it out. And getting back to your own writing, I, of course, have known you over time... mostly as a poet. And so I'm keen to ask you, what about your poetry? Are you leaving it behind forever?
I've never had an agenda when I write poetry, and I don't feel the need to put my talent in the service of social justice themes, or anyone's for that matter, nor do I feel the need to write regularly. I don't have a grindstone. I'm not a professional poet. I realized last night I write from an inexplicable mix of desire, location, and complaint, strangely enough. When the animus awakes, I write. When it sleeps, I leave it, well enough alone. That said, I feel there's a need to correct the present wobble of the planet with poetic weight, and that each poet pulling in the direction of his, her, or their humanity makes a difference.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I agree with you, too, that poetry is something that you have to do when it comes, not when you decide it comes.
See, I've never relied on it for money or anything. And so it's very simple for me just to, you know, it's one of those pure things I do. In journalism, in working life, you don't prostitute yourself, but you make all kinds of compromises. With poetry, you don't.
Well, good. So we will hear some down the road,
yep,
hopefully.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's switch to your new prose. Tell us about the first book you've written, and it's called People Get Sexy When Two Towns Fight.
Okay.
So what's the inspiration for a title like that? A juicy one, I might say.
Yeah. Well, 20 years of working in a newspaper, going back and forth constantly, daily, between Port Hope and Cobourg, I have a lot of ideas. I'm going to say right off the bat, this story is not about Port Hope and Cobourg, but about Port Promise and Sloburg, the hill people versus the flatlanders. The story is seen through the eyes of a very bored news photojournalist called Leighton Plymouth. He covers a story about a group of bored seniors at a monthly Probus-like meeting in Sloburg. I call them the Golden Handshake Crew. They get an idea to drive their fancy vintage cars over to Port Promise and take over the town hall. They want a nicer place to hold their meetings and figure the rubes in Port Promise won't wake up until it's too late. A certain substance that's claimed not to be marijuana, yet whose properties seem to cause the same lack of inhibition, spirits them on. Of course, the folks in Port Promise get wind of the caravan coming their way, and the kinsmen immediately set up a defensive perimeter of beer tents around town hall. The word of the invasion spreads through Port Promise like wildfire, and soon all the town's people have come down to stop the invaders. On the way to Port Promise, the Sloburg people, who are all seniors in fancy cars, are forced to spend a night camped in the drive-in because of overheating radiators. But after a fun night, they make it to Port Promise the next day. Picture a wagon train circle of fancy cars parked in the parking lot opposite Town Hall, on the other side of the Gomer Coochie-Coo River, with expensive awnings and camping equipment spread out for partying. And on the other side, a whole lot of rabid Port Promise people with bleachers, a stage set, in-ground barbecue pits, their own vintage car display, and more. That night, both sides throw down they got on each other. The showdown's like a small-town version of West Side Story, only way over the top. There's singing, dancing, poetry recital, battle rap, muscle car and monster tractors, fiddle playing, air guitar displays, flame-throwing, bagpiping, name-calling, calls for patriotism, and more, including the mysterious appearance in the night sky of the ghost of a young woman from Port Promise who was swept over Niagara Falls and who causes the two towns to come together. When the sun comes up, everybody's worked out their differences. And of course, there's a love story that weaves through this between a sexy Sloburg matron and a very hot, tanned building contractor from Port Promise.
Well, yes, of course it's not about Cobourg and Port Hope, is it? Perhaps you'll read a little bit of it for us.
So, I'll just preface the part I'm going to read. The caravan of seniors, the Golden Handshake Crew, has just pulled into the parking lot opposite Town Hall in Port Promise. The Sloburg crew is terrified at the response. They thought this is going to be a walk in the park to take over the Town Hall. The number of people on the other side of the river are war chanting about how they care, their blood's up, and everybody's feeling quite terrified until one of the Golden Handshake crew, Selena, never one to step back from any kind of confrontation, stops her car front and center. Those damn Sloburg car people should know better. It's showdown time, not showtime. How dare flatlanders display their vehicles with such arrogance? The cheek of the slobs is too much for some of the plumper car buffs, who rise off their chairs to shake their fists at the marauders. The smell of incompletely combusted gasoline, characteristics of vintage gas guzzlers, drifts across the river, heightening their outrage, as the odor of blood pumps the lust of carnivores. To add insult to this obvious injury, Selena stops her drop-dead sexy dreamboat of a red convertible in the middle of her run beside the river. Because the 59 Cadillac is a pin-up car, a top-down downtown, sparkling apple-red ride with supple white leather seats, it enlarges the lusting eyes of the hill tribe. The odor of car envy is palpable. No one except those committed to ending the use of fossil fuels in their lifetime can resist this land beast. Eager as a hottie in a juke joint, well-breasted, summer-dressed Selena, ready to rub herself in anyone's face, wearing a big, wide smile of red lips, stands up on the front seat and yells, "Hello, Port Promise!" as she throws her arms into the air in celebration. Clearly, this babe loves an audience. Before she jumps onto the white leather of the back seat, she turns up the volume on the car sound system. packing high-end amps and a subwoofer pleasure pack, her red Cadillac begins pumping out stadium-sized dance music. Most don't know what the name of this tune is, but the neural level of the beat is irresistible and easily recognizable. It's by that black dude who owns the line, "I feel good, na-na-na-na-na-na-na." If the car display was the first shot, then this is the second shot. Selena ain't glum like her chums. She stopped the parade, and now she's getting her groove on, taking it to the promisers, flat out. A hip-shaking, grind-em-up-and-spit-em-out show ensues, with Selena reprising more than a few dance moves from back in the day when soul trainers all left it on the dance floor, and not because they wanted to be the next best thing to reach idol status, but because, baby, that's what we did.
Well, thank you, Ted. We've been speaking with Ted Anson about his various writing projects. Now we will take a short break.